Holding on Galadon at bays, eight lines from the bottom. I'm going to begin the famous story of the Arbon Nichnas Subapagus. Arbon Nichnas Subapagus. There's four Chachamim who went into the Paradis. What does it mean, going into the Paradis? It means basically going up. Rashi says, Ololor Ki Al Yedei Shem. They went up to the heavens using a name of the Eivishter. And Rabbi Hananel talks about it in brief, and there's a Tshuva from Rabbi Chaim Goyin that talks about it at greater length, how there's Sifrei Kabbalah that they had in those times. Parts of them still exist. It's from called Pirkei Echolos that describe how you can use Shemus of Hashem to do that, to rise up from one world to the other.
Just decided one day they wanted to show
them? Apparently. I mean, the idea is these are great Talmud Chachamim, they're the greatest of their times, basically. They decided, you know, it's time for them to go and try to go up to these higher levels and not see what happens, but get that shleimus that comes from that. Tosafos actually says they didn't literally go up above. They just, it seemed to them like they felt like they were. And Chassidus talks about the idea, you know, it's not as though they went up to Atzilus or anything. In Tanya these days, the Alter Rebbe has been talking about the idea that even Moshe Rabbeinu didn't get higher than Netzach Hod Yisod of Olam HaYitzira. Here also, when we talk about Sabon, so the Paradis is also, they went up from Olam HaYitzira to Olam HaYitzira. And that's it. So that's a big leap. Ve'elohen ben Azai or ben Zoma Acher for Rabbi Akiva. Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, we know from Pirkei Avos, from other places. Acher, we're going to have a whole story about him soon. His real name is Elisha Ben Avuya, and Rabbi Akiva. Because later on, that's what he came to be called. At this time, you're right, he was still Elisha Ben Avuya, but, you know. Yes, they were saying over a vort of Torah in his name. Alom Torah, Yela, Lama Odoima, etc. But here, we're just telling the story, then yeah. When you reach the pure marble stones, I'll turn your mayim mayim. Don't say there's water. Because it's not water, it's marble. And the pasuk says, somebody who speaks lies cannot be in my presence, says the Eivishter. So what's this whole issue about marble and water? There's many, many things about it in Sifrei Kabbalah and in Sifrei Chassidus. One idea of it that's brought in a number of Maimarim is the problem is not so much saying that it's water. The problem is saying water, as if to imply that there's two different kinds of water, Mayim Elyonim and Mayim Tachtonim, which we're going to talk about soon. Lamaila, in the source of things, Lamaila, there's only one water. It's only, in our perception, the perception that the Eivishter gave us to see the world in, there's two kinds. There's the upper waters and the lower waters, and there's a rakia in between them. But Rabbi Akiva is cautioning them, don't think that Lamaila, in the source of things, there's that discrepancy. Everything, the Lamaila, it's all one.
The force are over there.
The Lamaila, everything is Hashem Echad. Everything, it's all one. It's all one within the Achdus of Eivishter. So at that point, don't be saying Mayim Mayim as if like there's a multiplicity up there. There's various other explanations also. Anyway, so what happened? Ben Azai hates it to me. Ben Azai glimpsed, he took a glance towards the Shechina and died. All of our Kosev Omer about him, the Pasuk says, Yaakov Eini Hashem Amav Sala Chassidav. It's difficult in Hashem's eyes when his Chassidim have to die. Rashi says, I mean, after all, eventually he's going to die, but he there was no choice, but he was going to die. Kilo Yirani Adam B'chai. But so to speak, the Eivishter felt bad about it, especially because Ben Azai was still a young man. We're going to learn in Yevamos Deis about whether he ever got married, whether he ever got married. If he did, he certainly didn't have children.
So he didn't know that someone would trust his connection.
No, obviously he knew, but each of these first three basically went too far. We'll talk about in a minute the difference between them and Rabbi Akiva. Wait. Ben Zoma hates its Benifka. Ben Zoma also looked and he went crazy. Nitrifodite. It has different effects on different people. I'll tell you something in a minute that the Shalak understands about this. Okay, because there's different levels how much they looked. Ben Azai obviously looked more and had close on their fish. Ben Zoma didn't reach that point, but his mind became deranged from what he saw and couldn't absorb. But all the makosav, on him the pasuk says, "Dvash matzasa echel dayecha." If you find honey, eat only as much as is sufficient for you. Don't overeat it. Tentis ba'anu, because you might overfill yourself with it. Back also, and then you'll throw it up. So the same thing over here. Like he tried to take in too much of a lakus, and therefore he wound up going crazy. Acher kitzitz benetios. Acher cut down the plants, which means Rashi says, since we're talking in terms of that they went into the paradise. Which are, you know, like, as if, so to speak, they went into Gan Eden, a place with trees. So therefore, it's appropriate when you're talking about somebody who went the wrong way after it, that like he started chopping down the trees. There's many different explanations why he uses that particular expression. One of them we're going to have later on in the Gemara, and when we talk about in Tosfos, that he later on after he went bad, he started convincing Jewish children to abandon Torah and go on to other pursuits. So, like he cut down the young trees of Talmid Chachamim. There's a few different ideas. The Kuzari says an interesting idea about this kitzitz benatios, that Acher, having seen these great, having had these great giluyim, these great ruchniistic revelations, felt in that case then, what do we need the physical actions of mitzvahs for anymore?
This terrible publicity for the Milo. One dies, one becomes meshuggah, and the other.
Well, that's why this is a very dangerous thing to do. Rabbi Akiva yotze b'shalom. Rabbi Akiva went out in peace, and actually, at the end of Tesavav on the days, the expression is here also in inactive. Nichnas b'shalom v'yotze b'shalom. He went in peace and he came out in peace.
Disappointing the others didn't.
So there is an idea that's brought in Siddus, that I've brought in a number of Maimarim. The difference is the other three all went in basically. We talked about yesterday about the malachim, that there's rotzei v'shoiv. There's supposed to be a dynamic of rotzei v'shoiv in a malach, also in a person, that on the one hand you're running towards the lakus, you want to be nisbatel in it. On the other hand, shoiv, you know you have to return back to where you are and do your avodah. The first three were looking for a rotzei. Therefore they went too far. So each one in their own way. Each one, the going too far had an effect on them. Rabbi Akiva nichnas b'shalom. He went in the first place having shalom in mind. What's shalom? The idea of unifying these things of rotzei and shoiv. You go into the rotzei. You go into this trend towards being mivatar yourself to the Eibishter with the shoiv in mind. With the shoiv in mind that the rotzei is going to enhance the shoiv afterwards. That he's nichnas b'shalom and therefore yotze b'shalom. He wasn't just doing it for biluyim, he's doing it in order to be able to enhance his avodah down here on earth. Was for shoiv, right. That is also the what?
The other people wanted to experience both the nefesh. Did that actually happen because they left this world?
So Ben Azai, that's exactly what happened. Ben Zoyma in a different way. Acher went sour, as we'll say soon, what he saw that misled him. But yeah, the idea is, in other words, they weren't necessarily looking for the rotzei to enhance their shoiv. They're looking for the rotzei as an end in itself, and that was the problem. Al derech was not of an aviyu, and in fact, the Shalach Kodesh says that each of these four people reflects one of the four people in history that this kind of thing happened to. You had Adam Arishon in Gan Eden. He was the equivalent of Acher, Kitzitz Benatio. So when he ate from the Eitz Hadas, it was a form of Kfirah, the Gemara says in Sahedrin, Odom Ershin Minhoya. Then you have later on Noach, had his Giluyim after the Mabel, and what happened? He became drunk. He lost his mind, like Ben Zoyma over here. Not even Aviyu. Their neshamas flew out of their bodies, like Ben Avli. Rabbi Akiva corresponds to Avram Avinu. He was able to absorb all these sodas and stay in this world and for it to enhance his avodah. Since we mentioned Ben Zoyma, the Gemara mentions a couple of things that they asked him. Some Mepharshim say that these are things that he was asked when he was Lamaila, when he's up there in the Paragus. Other Mepharshim say that this is just things that people down here on earth asked him, as Talmidim. Rashi says it's Talmidim asked him. First question. Maul Sarusi Kalba, are you allowed to castrate a dog? Now the Torah says in Parshas Emor, it describes the mumim that you can't that if an animal has them you can't bring it to the korban. Then it mentions several mumim that are related to castration, various ways in which the relevant organs are damaged. And then it says after that you can't bring them to the korban. It says over Arzachem Loi Sasu, and in your land you should not do these. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean you can't bring them to the carbon. Now, it says already, it means you're not allowed to, any animal, you're not allowed to castrate. why it says Va'aretzchem, we'll talk about in a second. So the question they were asking Ben Zoma is like this. This is in context of Korbanos. So, okay, we know, therefore, logically it applies to animals that are kosher for a korban, like cows and sheep and goats. Logically, fine, it would apply to most other animals as well, because you'd be allowed to, you can't use those for korbanos, but you could exchange them and use the exchanged animal for a korban. Hamachlis par b'chamor. One person has a donkey, one person has a cow, they make an exchange, and now that cow is kosher for a korban. Yes, so you're allowed to do that. There's a case, there's a famous case about it in Bava Basra.
Okay.
So,
except for a kelev,
because the Torah says, like, solvi esnam zono mechir kelev. Even the exchange of a dog, if I have a dog and you have a sheep and we trade them for each other, that sheep is also to be brought as a korban. So a dog is so far away from being from a korban, maybe the din doesn't apply to it. Amalami tells them no. The pasuk says, v'artzechem loisatu. In your land you should not do, which means kol sheba artzechem loisatu. Means any animal that exists in your land, you're not allowed to do this to. You're not allowed to castrate. Because otherwise, the word of Arzachem sounds like it means it applies only in Eretz Yisrael. Can't be. This is a chayvas aguf. This is only mitzvahs that flows from Eretz. Only mitzvahs that have to do with the land and its produce. There's a difference between Eretz Yisrael and everywhere else. This has nothing to do with the land per se. So over Arzachem can't mean Eretz Yisrael versus anywhere else. It has to mean anything that exists on the land. Which actually one of the mafarshim, I think, might be Ben Yehoyada, says that maybe the question was actually not so much, not about a regular dog, but rather about a sea dog, a walrus or something, where then arguably it's in the water. Maybe the din doesn't apply to it. And he says, no, but it spends a significant amount of time on land. It's considered a land animal. Right. Another one, Charlotte Ben Zoma. Here's another question they asked Ben Zoma. And again, part of the reason the Gemara is bringing these, there are other Amaforshim who talk about how these relate in a deep way to his experience in the Paradis. On the simple level, just these are complicated questions that he was able to dispatch very easily.
So according to that,
it's somebody asked him, yeah. So, second question, Charlotte Ben Zoma, Besula she'ibra ma'ul kohen gadol. If a Besula is pregnant, is she allowed to marry a kohen gadol? A kohen gadol, it has to marry a besula. One second, so we're going to talk about how that's possible. So you have a woman who claims, Rashi says this woman claims to be a besula. Tosfos discusses, would we accept her claim? Maybe we actually have to check. Whatever it is, a kohen gadol has to marry a besula. A kohen gadol is not allowed, we know the kohen gadol is not allowed to marry a grusha, a zoina, a chalala, an almona, and there's a mitzvah, he has to marry a besula. She's not allowed to have ever had relations with anybody else. Now, you have this woman, she claims to be a besula, but the kohen gadol marries her. Turns out she's pregnant from beforehand, and when you go and check, you find that actually, in fact, she is a besula. So she was telling the truth, she is a besula, but ma'u the kohen gadol. Is she allowed to be married to the kohen gadol? Why? Because on the one hand, mi chai shinu le d'shmuel. Do we have to be concerned about what Shmuel said? D'ama Shmuel, yochal ani livo kama be'ilas b'loy dam. I am capable, he says, of doing several acts of be'ila without causing blood to flow. The hymen is a kind of a loose flap of skin in oisamakum of the woman. It's a loose-ish kind of membrane. It's possible, very very carefully, to position things when at the time of bia that you don't actually break it. So therefore, though, you know, she could have still had relations with a man. He didn't actually break her hymen and made her pregnant. Well, then she'd be also to marry a kohen gadol, because it's not a question of whether she has the physical membrane or not. It's a question of whether she ever had relations with a man, and in this case, she did.
And relation means even if the membranes were not broken.
That's what we're saying. Yeah. We'll have a long sugya about this in Yevamos in a couple of months. Or maybe what Shmuel is saying is not very common. Maybe it's more likely that she became pregnant some other way. What other way, we'll talk about in a second. And then she would be able to marry a kohen gadol because she's a besula. She has not had relations with a man. She's pregnant. There's other ways of becoming pregnant. Amalahu. So Ben Zoma answers them, the Shmuel lo shchiach. Shmuel's case is taka not common, that Shmuel was an expert at this kind of thing. He knows how to do the exact positioning. Most people don't. Therefore, b'chai shinan, and therefore we are... come on, no, the Torah. Come on, let's... you know. V'chai shinan, and we can speculate which on the side of it usually chayshinin means we're worried about, we're choshish of lechumra. Sometimes it's also, sometimes it also means lekula. We can accept for the sake of leniency, shema ba'am bati ibra. Maybe she became pregnant in a bath. If you have, a man bathed before her and then emitted some zera, and then afterwards she bathes in the same water, and one gets in and fertilizes, yeah. So therefore, so she's pregnant even though she was never with a man. And therefore, he's saying, yeah, so that she'd be allowed to marry the Kohen Gadol. Yeah. Question is, Shmuel said that any shichvas zera that does not shoot powerfully like an arrow is not going to impregnate. So in this case, we're talking about a zera that's floating around in the water over there and then floats in. How is it going to make her pregnant? The answer is me'ikra na me'yerda kachet haba. True, but before, when it originally came out from the man, it was yerda kachet. It didn't come out, it didn't just dribble out. So once, that means it's potent enough that yes, now it's able to go in like that and fertilize like that. Historically, actually, we talked yesterday or the day before about Sefer Ben Sira, the Muflim of Chal Tachker. There's a Sefer called Aleph Beis Ben Sira that says that this is how he was conceived. That his father was Yirmiyahu Hanavi, his mother was Yirmiyahu's daughter. She had bathed in the same keli after her father, and nevertheless, Ben Sira is not considered a mamzer. The Radvaz writes about a case in his times. We're talking about 500 years ago. He was the Rav. He was the Rav of Egypt for many years. He writes about a case like that in his time. There is, from this little piece of Gemara over here, comes a lot of ink that's been spilled by the poskim achronim on the whole question of artificial insemination. That's exactly what we're talking about over here. So then that raises a lot of questions. Here the Gemara is establishing, okay, she's still considered a psula because she hasn't been with a man. But you have other questions. Do we b'chlau consider, is the child born from that b'chlau considered related to his father? Or maybe not, maybe only if there was a normal be'ila. If the zera comes from somebody else, if it's, artificial insemination by donor, they call it nowadays, is that allowed, or is the kid a mamzer? There's all kinds of questions, and a lot of it goes back to this little bit of Gemara over here. Whether it's allowed is a whole other matter. In general, I think the poskim take the view that where necessary, where there's no other way, then artificial insemination by the husband might be okay. You get into issues. One of the other issues you get into is hetzas zera l'matala. In order to collect the zera from the husband, on the face of it, he's.
Let me ask you a question. Scientifically, you don't hear any possibility to fertilize
eggs. Of course you do. You need sperm to fertilize an egg.
No. You need sperm, but you don't only need sperm. You can take a nucleus of a husband's cell and put it into an egg, and you still have...
Okay, you still have... Okay, fine. When they perfect that, fine. Right now, the state of the art, as far as I know, is they still need sperm. So then you get into the question of hitzas zera levatala. So there's different things that the post can talk about that. One possibility is you actually have them, you have him do be'ila, and then you collect it after the fact. And then inseminate her with it. Whatever. It's not negay right now to get into the details. But a lot of that whole discussion comes from our Gemara over here about the various dinim that derive from that. Tanan Abanan. Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya shoy omid agav ma'ila b'har habayis. It happened once that Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya was standing on a step on the har habayis. Obviously, when the Beis Hamikdash was still standing, Ra'oh ben Zoma, and ben Zoma saw him, v'lo amad milafanav, but he didn't stand up for him. Now, ben Zoma was a Talmud of the Chachamim of that time, including Rabbi Yeshua. So by rights, he should stand up out of kavod. Amaloi, Rabbi Yeshua tells him, me'ayin ula'ayin ben Zoma, from where and to where, ben Zoma, which means Rashi says, like me'ayin tova v'ayin libchatarud, where are you coming from, and what are you so intensely involved in that you didn't even notice me? Marsha says, actually, that Rabbi Yeshua is kind of hinting to him, if you didn't stand up for me because of Gaiva, because you think you're too great for that, remember, me'ayin ola'ayin, me'ayin basa ola'ana t'hoylech. Remember, to have derech eretz.
Rabbi Yeshua below Eina, but opposed
to 4 amas. Yeah, but Rabbi Movak, at least, yeah. Well, okay, whatever. So maybe he came within 4 amas, whatever. Amalois, so Ben Zoma tells him, I was contemplating the space between the upper water and the lower water that we talked about before.
After this story story of the Pardes another time?
Ah, so one second. We'll talk about that in a minute when we talk about Adayin Hubachot. So I'll get to that. He says, I'm contemplating this idea of the upper waters and the lower waters. The Ein Bein Zeh LaZeh, L'Sholosh Etzbois Bovad. The distance between them is only three etzbois. Shenema, V'ruach HaLikim Merachefes Apnei Amoyim. As the Pasuk says, the Spirit of Hashem hovered over the surface of the water, which means, K'yona Shem Merachefes Abonei. It's like a mother dove that hovers over her babies. V'ein in a gaf, and she doesn't touch. She's a couple of inches over them. So the same way, the Mayim El Yonim hover a couple of inches over the Mayim El Tachtonim. A couple of etzvahs. Why three etzvahs? And I've seen different possibilities. Ben Yoyada relates it to the three olamos biyah. You could also relate it by the same token to the tzimtzum, the particular tzimtzum between one and the next. The tzimtzum, the shloisha tzimtzumim atzumim. The Alter Rebbe mentions in Tanya three great tzimtzumim that created the olamos as we know them. Amar lahen Rabbi Yeshua l'tamidim. So Rabbi Yeshua says to tamidim, that's not it. Adayin ben zoma b'bachutz. Ben zoma stood on the outside. Now, what does that mean? You asked whether this story happened after the previous one. So Rabbi Haigoin says yes. When Rabbi Yeshua says Adayin ben zoma b'bachutz, he means basically ben zoma is still outside, out of his mind. He lost his mind from the nichnasu l'pardes. So according to that, according to Rabbi Haigoin, Rabbi Yeshua is saying that ben zoma still hasn't regained his seichel. He's thinking about the Mayim El Yonim, Mayim Tachtonim, deep stuff. Doesn't mean he went crazy like one of these guys who mumbled to themselves on the street corners, you know. But The Rambam has a whole different explanation of it. The Rambam has a whole long, in Moreh Nevuchim, gives a whole long mashal to illustrate the idea. Like, you imagine you have a bunch of people in the capital city, he says. You have some people who are walking, some people in the Chalal don't even know there's a palace over there. Some people are walking away from it. Some people are walking towards it, but they haven't found the entrance yet. Some people are inside in the various hallways, and eventually you have the select few who get to see the king. These are all different levels of people as how close they come to knowing about the Eivishter, to knowing about Elokus. So Rabbi Yeshua is saying, since Tamid ben Zoma is still on the outside, like he's still far from the real ultimate truth. So according to the Rambam, it might be this was before the Nechus of the Pardes thing. And why? What's the problem with this three etzbois thing? Mechti v'ruach alikim merachefes apnei amayim emes havi. When is this pasuk that the Eivishter's spirit is hovering over the water? When is that? B'yom Arishon. That was on the first day. And when were the waters separated? When do you start having Mayim El Yonim and Mayim Tachtonim? Only on the second day. The Eibishter says, Yehirakia, there should be a sky, there should be a firmament, and it'll separate between the one water and the other. So what kind of three etzvos? Rekama, okay, so how much is the separation? Amar Abacha Bayakiv Kimlo Nima, a hair's breadth. The distance between Gashmias and Ruchnias is a very slight subtle difference. The Rabbanan give a different metaphor for it, like the planks of a bridge. When you build a bridge, you put one plank next to the other, you try to put them as close as possible to each other. You don't want gaps in it. Inevitably there are tiny little gaps there. So that's the gap between gap, there is a gap there. But it's a very small one between the Mayim El Yonim and Mayim Tachtonim, which kind of goes back to what Rabbi Akiva was saying before, that when you're up in the Olamos El Yonim, don't think that Mayim as if there's two different kinds of Mayim. Up there, it's all one. So even as it comes down to our world, there's only that slight difference.
So where would it be in terms of
I don't know. I don't know what I don't know how that relates to the Olamos that we're familiar with. In general, we talk about that the Mayim El Yonim is the Ruchniistika worlds, and the Mayim Tachtonim are the Gashmiistika ones. That's why the Mayim Tachtonim cry, we want to be by the Eivishter, and therefore we have Nitzach HaMayim, and so according to that, we're just talking about the interface between Gashmiist and Ruchniist, which we're saying is a very slight one, yeah. Mazutra v'teme Rabasi, Amar Mazutra, or some say Rabasi, says, Ketrei klimi depresi adodi, like two cloths that are spread one on top of the other. Again, they don't fuse together. There is the distance, the separation between them is very small. But Avri Law and others say Kitshrei Kasi Deschipi Hadodi. It's like two cups that are stacked one on top of the other. All different ways of expressing this idea. Okay, so that takes care. So now we talked a little bit about Ben Zoma. Now we know what he was and what he was before, what he was after. Next, now the Gemara is going to spend the rest of the rest of this Amud and most of Amud Bey is talking about Acher, the tragedy of Acher. Acher kitzitz benatiyos. Acher, we said, cut down the plants. He became a kofer. All of our kotzav omer, and on him the pasuk says, al titin espicha lachti espesarecha. Don't let your mouth make your flesh, make your body do an avera. Which Marsha points out, the rest of the pasuk also, the pasuk continues, and we'll see soon how the rest of the pasuk is relevant to Acher's story as well. Maihi, what happened? What did he see that made him go wrong? And then he said the wrong thing. Chazam mitat deyisihivalei reshusa. He saw mitat, and again, this is one of the malachim, so we don't say his name in full. But he saw him deyisihivalei reshusa. He was given reshus lemesav to sit lemichtav zachvasa deYisrael, to write the schusim of the Jewish people. Hagoyes Abachaz is not all the time. He's given permission to do that Chodesh Shaita B'Yoma, 1 hour each day. Who is this Matat? So there's a number of different
things to this.
Matat himself has permission a certain amount of time each day to sit and write down the Chosim of the Jewish people. This is what Acher saw. Now, who is this Matat? So he is, in various places it talks about, among others, Rashi mentions on Chumash, that in Parshas Mishpatim, the Eibishter says that I'm going to be sending a malach to lead you through the desert. And the pasuk says over there, Kishmi Bekirba, my name is within him, and Al Tamer, boy, which literally means don't rebel against him, but the Gemara also explains means Tamer Melosh Tmura, don't confuse him with me. This malach matat is the Eibishter's shliach in this world. So therefore, he's the malach that the Eibishter is proposing to send him out. Moshe didn't want that. That's a whole other matter. Moshe insisted that Hashem himself should lead us. But this malach is so to speak, Hashem's shliach in the world. And in fact, the full name, matat, here it's written with an extra yud, and Chassidus talks about the difference between the two different levels, within him, one in Bria, one in Yetzirah. But the way the name is usually written, mem, tes, tes, resh, vav, nun, has the same gematria as the name shin, dal, yud. Therefore, it expresses the idea that there's a special koyach aliki in this malach. And therefore, the Jewish people have to be warned. Don't confuse him with the Eibishter. Don't start bowing down to him as if he's the Eibishter. In a number of places in Kabbalah and from there in Chassidus, like I said, it talks about the different levels within this malach himself. Generally, we talk about him being in Olam HaYetzirah, which goes back to what I was saying before, that this Abon Nishnas of the Paradis, we're not talking about they didn't go up to Tatsilus, let alone to Bria. They went up to Yetzirah. But even that is a big jump. Yeah. Anyway, so this matat is sitting and writing the schosim of the Jewish people. Omar, so Elisha says to himself, Gemira, we know with the Kabbalah, Dilamaila lehavila yeshiva, that up in Shemayim there's no sitting, v'lai tachrus, or competition, v'lai odef, v'lai ifui, there's no back of the neck, because the malachim, the way Yechezkel describes them, have faces on each side, the four faces that we talked about yesterday. And there's no tiredness. The Rambam explains some of these things a little differently. Oruf and Ifui, he said, means division or multiplication. So there's no sitting up Lamaila. The only one who sits, Kaviyachol, is Eibishter. Shema Chas V'Shalom Beis Rishur, you're saying? So maybe that means, Chas V'Shalom, that there are actually two powers. There's the Eibishter, and then there's Matat. Which Reb Hai Goin says that's exactly the mistake that Acher made. He became in those days the state religion of Persia was they called Zoroastrianism, where they believe there's two gods, there's a god of good and a god of evil. Gemara mentions them in a half dozen places. So the Reb Hai Goin says that's the same mistake that Acher made. He thought that there's two gods. Because he sees that Matas is sitting. Well, then that Lachura that puts him on an equal level with the Eibishter. Chas
V'Shalom. I'm not saying he's considering literally, but
whatever Acher perceived over there, it means that it means that somehow he mixed up that he looks at Matas and sees as though he's the equal of the Eibishter. So when this happened, Apkul Matat, they took Matat out. Machiru Shisin posted the Nura, and they gave him Lamaila 60 beatings with a stick of fire, which Tosfos says it's not so much as a punishment that he did the wrong thing and therefore he gets punished. Malachim didn't really do the wrong thing. It's rather the point was it was meant as a demonstration for Acher's sake. Don't think that Matat is a power on a par with the Eibishter. You see, he gets whipped when he does. He can get whipped just as much as anybody else. Nevertheless, though, Acher didn't take the lesson.
Oh.
He saw it, in other words, according to that, but he saw it because it was meant for his benefit, but nevertheless, he didn't take the lesson. Bechlal, by the way, you know, you were asking yesterday why it is, we were saying that the Chayis HaKadosh sweat and they have Yira by the Eibishter. Why is that? What do they have to have Yira for? So I was saying yesterday because some of them, they're avoided Yira. There's also the idea that talks in Chassidus that the Malachim have Yira and they have a Yira and a Pachad and a sweat and whatever for the fact that they feel they could be closer to the Eibishter than they are now. They want to have close on Nefesh also. The same thing that we said about Rotsay and Shoy, the Malachim have that kind of dynamic as well. So they want to be able to get closer to the Eibishter, and they can't, and that makes them have this Yira. So we're saying over here, rather, right, this is related to this idea over here that even a Malach like Matat, who's one of the highest of the Malachim, as we're describing over here, he's Kaviyachol the Eibishter's personal messenger, but nevertheless, look how infinitely far he is from the Eibishter also that he can even get whipped where necessary. Why 60 Mepharshim talk about that down here, Lamata, the maximum number of Malkus is 39, three times the age 13, which is the minimum that a person can get punished by Beis Din. Beis Din Shamayla doesn't punish a person until they're 20. Corresponding to that, the Pech in Shamayim are 60. Three times 20. Yeah. Amrulay, because they said to Matat, my time of Kichazise lo kamos mikamei. Why, when you saw Acher coming, didn't you stand up for him? You should have stood up for him either out of respect, he's a Talmud Chacham, or you should have stood up in order that he shouldn't have the possibility of misunderstanding what happened over here. Well, Acher didn't take the hint, so he started believing, as we're saying, that there are two gods. So Matat was now given permission to erase all of Acher's tzchusim. Now that he became a kofer, now that he became an apokodos, then all previous tzchusim are gone. And Kedushin says something like that. You can have a Talmud Chacham who does. You can have a person who does mitzvahs, and then there's Toya al Rishonis that he regrets. You know, why did I ever bother doing those mitzvahs? And then he loses those chosim. In Atara Sedorim that we say tomorrow, we say, you know, when we ask Atara for the various things and for the various mitzvahs that we did, the various Hanhogas Tovas that we did without saying Bli Neder, we say in any Toya Chas V'Shalom. I'm not Chas V'Shalom regretting that I did the good things. I just say I wish that I'd said Bli Neder about him. Yotza Basko v'Omra, Basko came out and said, Shuvu banim shevavim, all wayward children, you can return, chutz me acher, except for acher. It's also in Enyakov, Shiyadav akvodi umoradvi, that acher uniquely, he knew of my covered, he experienced this nichnas ulapardis, and he still rebelled against me.
We don't know why he rebelled after.
Well, we just said why he rebelled. The truth is, the truth, Tosfos brings over here the whole backstory. So let's take a couple of minutes and discuss what Tosfos quotes from Yerushalmi, the whole backstory. There were actually many factors that went into Acher going off like this and becoming what he became. The first one is actually that it went back one time. He himself told the story to Rameyer. We're going to talk about soon that Rameyer remained Acher's Talmud even after Acher went off the Geras. We'll get to that soon. So Acher one time told Rameyer the whole story. He says that my father Avuya was one of the great important people of Yerushalayim. On the day of my bris, he invited all the important people to the bris. So everybody's sitting over there and talking and singing and dancing and whatever. And the Talmud Chachamim who were there, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, say, you know what? These guys are doing their own stuff. Let's use this time for our purposes for learning Torah. And they start talking in Torah, and a fire comes down from Shemayim and surrounds them. So Avuya is very impressed by that. First he's afraid they're going to burn down his house, but they tell him, no, this is Ruchniistic fire, where there's a fire over here like when the Torah was given. So Avuya says, oh, that's the power of Torah. In that case, then I'm going to raise my son to be a Talmud Chacham. Very nice thing for him to say, but it wasn't L'shem Shemayim. He's doing it for the sake of this kind of covet, for the sake of these Giluyim, rather than for the sake of being connected to Asmus Mahus, to the Eibishter, and therefore didn't have a Kiyum. That's one thing. Then Tosfos quotes something else. It went back even further than that. When Elisha ben Avuya's mother was pregnant with him, she one time passed by a place of Avodah Zarah. They were cooking. They were bringing korbanos or cooking a stew or whatever in the place over there. She smelled it, and we learned in Yoma that when a pregnant woman smells food and doesn't get to eat from it, it can endanger her. The baby, the embryo is craving the food, and he can, you know, the cravings can harm the mother. That's why we learned in Yuma, you're supposed to whisper in the mother's ear that it's Yom Kippur or whatever it is and see if that calms the baby down, and if not, then you go ahead and give her to eat. Similarly over here, they tried doing that, didn't help, so they wound up having to give her from this food, and therefore that had an effect on him also. One more thing, which the Yerushalmi brings, and the Babli also brings it in a couple of places, is that Elisha ben Avuya, Acher, lived during the time after the war by Kocha, in the years of the great Shmad over there, when Adrianus, Hadrian, was trying to force the Yidden to abandon Torah and Mitzvahs altogether. This is the time of the Asar Arugim Malchus. This is all those tragedies that happened in that time. Elisha sees one day, he sees Reb Chutz B'Sama Turgamon, was one of the Asar Arugim Malchus. We'll have about him on Yom Kippur and Eila Ezkira. Acher sees Reb Chutzpah's tongue being dragged around in the dirt by wild animals. And Reb Chutzpah, he was the Maturgamon. His job was that when Reb Gamliel, or whoever was the Nasi at that time, is giving a drasha, then Reb Chutzpah is repeating it aloud for everyone, explaining it for everybody with his tongue. So Elisha ben Avuya says to himself, you know, that's the kind of reward a tzaddik gets. He used his tongue for Kedusha his whole life, and now it gets dragged around like this. Chas v'shalom, he says to himself, Avisha doesn't run the world. And that was the final straw.
Why was the tongue?
Why? It was a time when we don't know why all these things were happening. I mean, there's the idea about the Asura Rugamalchus that it says in the Piyutim over there that it corresponds to the 10 sons of the 10 brothers of Yosef who sold him. But still, that it happened, such horrible things, we kind of don't know. Even the Malachim objected to what's going on over there, the famous thing with Rabbi Akiva getting his flesh combed off, and Abish just says to them, Shtoik Tachol of Machshol of Fonai. There's some things we can't know. But Elisha ben Avuya couldn't handle it, and that was the final straw for him. Anyway, so
maybe it was a test.
Maybe it may have been a test, but whatever it is, he didn't pass it. Yeah. So this Baskel comes out and says that everybody except Acher can do tshuva. Now, what does that mean? Is tshuva taka foreclosed for him? So in many places in Chassidus it says no, tshuva tata is not going to help him anymore. There's two different levels of tshuva, as the Alter Rebbe describes in the Geirat Tshuva. There's tshuva tata and there's tshuva ilah. Tshuva tata taka is not going to help him. He can still do tshuva. First of all, tshuva tata is not going to help. Second of all, tshuva bonim shovavim means that usually the Ebishter helps people to do tshuva. Habol itayr messiah noise. In this case, Acher is not going to... No, one second. No, for regular people, in order to do just tshuva tata, the Ebishter helps them.
But those who can do tshuva ilah, the Ebishter.
Maybe also, but at any rate, they start with tshuva tata first. But yeah, well, what we're saying over here is two things. First of all, for Acher, the only thing that's going to help is tshuva ilah, the higher level tshuva, which I'll never describe in Tanya over there, reconnecting himself on a higher level to the Eibishter. And second of all, he's not going to be given siyata d'shmaya in that. He's going to have to do it all by himself. He still can do it, but he's going to have to work on it, as opposed to a regular person who will be given siyata d'shmaya. But Acher took it in the literal sense, basically. I don't have a chance to do tshuva anymore. Omar, so he said to himself, since that person, meaning myself, has been thrown out of Olam Haba, lipuk lishani b'hai alma, so at least let me go out and enjoy this world. Nofak Acher l'tavisro, so Acher went out to a bad way of living. He became an apikodis, he became a balavis. Nofak ashkach zoyna, he went out and found a zoyna, tava, and he propositioned her. Amr Lei, she said to him, "Valav Elisha ben Avuya." Don't you do the great Talmud Chacham Elisha ben Avuya? Hagoyes Habachat Shishimcha Yoytze B'chol Ha'aretz. Your name is famous in throughout the world. Oka Puglo Mimeshra B'Shabbos. So he answered her. He went on Shabbos and ripped out a radish from a field on Shabbos. V'Yavlan, he gave it to her. Like to show, I'm willing to be with you. I'm ready to be Mechal Shabbos as well. Amr, so she said to herself, "Acher who?" It must be somebody else. This can't possibly be Elisha ben Avuya. And that's where he got the name Acher, from her.
set itself as a Gennady, like a great person's name is
Gennady. Yeah, also, yeah, that may well be, yeah.
But there's something else I remember hearing once, I don't remember what it is, but the others all talked about something related to, there's something to the name Arthur.
Okay, I don't know what it is, but okay.
But I remember hearing
it. Okay. Well, there is actually, now that I think of it, I think I may know something about, something along the lines, we said that Acher's mistake was that he thought that there's two Rishuyas, that there's not Hashem Echad, but that there's two. So therefore we change the Echad into Acher, effectively. I think there's an idea that says something like that. Now, we said before that the Gemara is going to talk about over here how Reb Meir remained Acher's Talmud even after all this happened. So Shal Acher's Reb Meir, L'Acher Shiyot L'Tayr B'Sra. After
he remained the
Talmud of Arusha, we'll talk about it on Amud. We'll talk about it on Amud Beis. Wait up.
Why do you think it was Yotzei Mitzrayim? Until that point, he wasn't. He did all these things.
No, that's Yotzei Mitzrayim. It means he went off to start doing Averis. Up and in other words, there was a progression over here. The Gemara is going to talk about it on Amud Beis. Also, there was a progression. First he had thoughts of minus in his heart and inside that he didn't bring him out. And then later on, eventually Yotzei Mitzrayim, he actually went openly and started sinning. Well, that's what we said. All these different factors came into play.
The Torah shows in a large place like building up and the downfall of Jewish country that it happened not just one thing.
That's true. Yeah. So Shaul Acher is from Meir La'achar Shiyot to the Tav Bitzra. So after Acher had gone out to Tav Bitzra, after he had gone to bad behavior, he one time asked Reb Meir, Amalei, my dechtiv, what does it mean? The pasuk says, Gamas zelo umaseh alsar lekim. Indeed, this corresponding to this, Hashem made. Everything has an opposite in the world. What does that mean? Amalei, so Meir tells it, Kol mashe barach ha-shpoch ha-barach ha-negdoi. It means that exactly what it sounds like. Everything the Eibishter made, he created something else corresponding to it. Not necessarily against it, but a different kind of the same thing. For example, Bara Harim, Bara Gvaris, so he created mountains, and he created lower hills. Bara Yam and Bara Naharis, he created seas, and he created rivers. Amalai, so Acha tells him, Rabbi Akiva, Rabach Loyamakach. You should know, Rabbi Akiva, your teacher, did not say like that. He and Rabbi Akiva had been friends beforehand, so, you know, he knew what Rabbi Akiva had said. Ella, what it means is, it means opposites, actually. Bara Tzadikim, Bara Rishayim. The Eivishter has created Tzadikim and Rishayim. Bara Ganeden, Bara Gehenim. He created Ganeden and Gehenim. Kol Achad V'Echad Yeshle Beis Chalokim. So every person in the world has two portions waiting for him. Echad V'Ganeden V'Echad V'Gehenim. One in each place. Zocha Tzadik, when a Tzadik is Zocha, Notoch Chelke V'Chelik Chaveri V'Ganeden. Then he gets his own portion and the portion of somebody else in Gan Eden, of his colleague in Gan Eden. Meaning, if you have two people, you have two friends, for example, one becomes a tzaddik, one becomes a rasha. So the tzaddik winds up getting his own portion as well as his friend, as well as the portion that would have been his friend if his friend had done the right thing. Nischayev rasha, when the rasha becomes guilty, not chelke v'chelik chaver of Gehenim, then he takes his portion and his friend's portion in Gehenim. One idea of it is that there's a vote from the Baal Shem Tov that sometimes you have a tzaddik manages to get somebody else to have a Hebrew tshuva, to have a thought of tshuva. So that person at that point has gained a place in Olam Haba. But the person doesn't follow up on it. The tzaddik, therefore, gets the credit. He tried to get that person to do the right thing. So therefore, he deserves to have that guy's portion gane. Yeah. Okay.
He saw the whole world.
So he saw that, exactly. So Marshall says one idea of it is that Acher is trying to use this as an excuse for himself. That, you know, the Eibishter created people the way they are. You know, I'm a Rosh, okay, you know, the Eibishter made me that way. And not only that, some tzaddik already took my portion. It's too late for me. Amr of Masharshi, Maikra, where do we see a pasuk that expresses this idea? Gabit tzaddikim k'siv, because by the tzaddikim it says, l'chein ba'artzam mishne yiroshu. Therefore, in their land, meaning in Gan Eden, they will inherit a double portion. What's a double portion? Their own and somebody else's. Gabit rishayim k'siv, and by rishayim it says, u'mishne shivorin shivram, and a double breaking will be their breakage. So again, like they get a double dose in Gan Eden. Another time, Shaul Acher Shemayu Acher Sheyotel Tavasra. Acher asked Reb Meir another question after he had gone off the derech. He asked him, "My dichtiv lo ya'archena zahav uschuchis." That you can't compare to it. It meaning Torah. The whole chapter is talking about over there about the chachma of Torah. You can't compare to it gold or glass. Utmurasa klipaz. You can't exchange it for vessels of paz. Paz is either fine gold or jewels or whatever it is. Anyway. So basically the question is, gold I understand, jewels I understand. What's so special about glass? This is words of Torah. It's as difficult to acquire them as it is to acquire gold and puz utensils. But they're as easy to lose by forgetfulness as a glass cup. You're holding a glass cup one moment of inattention and you drop it and it's gone. So it is also with Torah. Incidentally, on the side here, it says that this teaching about Eilu Dibrei Torah in Ovis to Rav Nosson and actually quoted in Elisha ben Avuya's name. So according to that, then Rav Meir is telling over Elisha ben Avuya his own teaching on this pasuk from beforehand. Amaloi, so again, Acher tells him, Rabbi Kiva Rabbach loy Amakach, your Rebbe Rabbi Kiva did not explain the pasuk this way. Ella, he said like this, Ma klei zahav uklei tzchuches af pishin nishburu yeshlan takana, just like gold or glass vessels, even when they break, you can still fix them. Gold you can remelt, and glass you can also. You can melt down the shards and make a new glass keli. Even though he's gone bad, still has a takana. So Rav Meir grabs the opportunity. Okay, well then you're saying there's a takana. Do tshuva. Amaloi, Acher tells him I can't. Because I already heard from behind the curtain. So the curtain where that separates the Mosal Yonim from us. Shuvah bonim shayvahim chutz me'acher. Return, you wayward children, except for Acher. So I'm a goner. Now, as we said before, he wasn't a goner. All the Bas comment is he's not going to be helped and he's going to need to do tshuva yila. But he didn't understand it that way.
But why did the Bas kol have to be formulated this way?
Because that was part of the test. Is he going to use that as an excuse, or is he going to, grab the opportunity? The Eidish is not going to help me, but I'll do whatever I can myself. Yeah.
What was the point that he said?
So Marshall also says that he's kind of using an excuse. A regular Talmud Chacham Shasarach, like okay, he went a little sour, yesh le'takana, but not somebody like me who went completely the other direction.
It's supposed to waste a lot of time, come back in the future.
So maybe that could be also, yeah. Tosfos quotes, by the way, from the Yerushalmi that at the end of his life, Rav Meir came to visit him when Acher was on his deathbed, and still is trying to convince him to do tshuva. Toshiv Enosh Adaka, he says that the Eibishter accepts tshuva even Adaka, even when a person is crushed and about to die. Elisha starts crying, and then he died. And Rav Meir says to himself, it seems to me that he did tshuva. And we'll talk about on Amud Beis what happened after he died. It happened once that Acher was riding on a horse on Shabbos, and Rav Meir is walking behind him to learn Torah from him. As they're walking, Meir chazer l'acharacha. He says, Meir, turn around. Shakarshi outi bi'ikvei susi. I already have estimated using the hooves of my horse ad kan tchum Shabbos, that up till here is a tchum Shabbos. Me, I don't care. I'm going to go further. You should stop over here. Even though he's Acher, the Rosha now, he didn't want to cause Rav Meir tzar. Also, some of Horsham see doing this like kind of show off, like I can even keep track of the number of paces my horse has taken and know where the Tom Shabbos is. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, but yeah. Amalei, Rav Meir says to him, you're telling me turn around. Apata Chazer B'chol, you also turn around, do tshuva. Amalai says again, this time Reb Meir is not going to take no for an answer. Takfe, he grabbed a hold of him, Aile le Bemedrisha, and schlepped him into the Bismedrish. Amalai le Yanuka, they turn to a kid and tell him, Psoikli Psukha, tell me your pasuk. We find throughout Tanakh a famous thing, not Tanakh, throughout the Gemara, a famous thing that people would go to a child and ask them what pasuk you learned, and it's a Nevuah Ktana. It's called like a minor form of Nevuah. Amalai, the pasuk, the kid tells him, I just learned the pasuk. Ein shalom amar Hashem lo rishayim. Hashem says there's no shalom, there's no peace for the wicked. Which Marashah says, it was kind of meant like usually a person goes into the Bes Medrash and you tell him shalom aleichem. In this case, like the Eivishter is, so to speak, saying to Elisha, there's no shalom for you.
That's what happened with Rabbi Chaim Vital when he tried to come to the Arizal after delaying some time.
That what?
The he realized something was wrong, that like he wasn't getting the reception that he was supposed to be getting, and then he went in and cried, and then went back to Arizal, and Arizal said he could now accept him.
Okay. There's a story I've heard about Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, where one time their local moiser one time comes to him in secret that the local goyim had been planning a blood libel. They wanted him to testify on behalf of it. He at the last moment, the Pintel Yid woke up and he couldn't go through with it. So now they're running after him and he's in danger. So actually, the thing is, at first when the guy comes, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid says, I don't want to hear from you. You've done too many averes. You're a goner. The guy keeps persisting. You have to help me do tshuva. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid holds up his little stick that he uses for pointing in a sefer, and he says, you know what? When this stick starts growing flowers, then you can come back. As the guy turns around to leave, the thing starts growing flowers. And he calls him back, and then he hears out the whole story and helps him do trouble. What's the idea? The guy had to go through that last nisayan that he's going to be rejected, and he's still gonna try. Dachak v'nichnas. He's gonna push his way in. This is what Acher should have done, basically. Ilo beknishta achriti. So Rav Meir takes him into another shul. Amaloi lenuka psaiklik zukach. He says Amaloi another pasuk. Came to chabsi ban neser v'sarulach bodas. The Eibush says to the Jewish people, even if you cleanse yourself with neser and make yourself a lot of soap, Nichtem avonus lefana, your avedus have made a permanent stain before me. Similar idea, like you can't do tshuva. I will be knish nachriti, he tells him into a third shul. Amalei elenuchu psukli psukach, he tells another kid to tell me your pasuk. Amalei tells him another pasuk. But at shadud, you, the one who's been robbed, matasi, what are you going to do? Kitilbashi shani, even if you wear scarlet, like beautiful clothes. Kitadi adizahab, even if you wear gold jewelry. Kitikri bapuchei naich, even if you paint your eyes with eyeshadow. Lashav tisyapi vagomer, you're beautifying yourself for nothing. Also a message like saying, it's hopeless. Ilel beknishta achriti, he takes him from one shul to another. Ad ilel etzleisa beknishta, he took him altogether to 13 shuls. And all of them said to him, Sukim, each kid, Ashgacha Pratis had learned that day of a pasuk along these lines, a pasuk telling Acher that they're hopeless. No, in each one they're learning on a different schedule, but so they arranged it that they all, yes. Labastra Amalei, no, but these are after Oksukim, you got to learn them sometime. Labastra Amalei Psoikut Sukach, the last kid, he had in the 13th shul, he tells him, tell me your pasuk. Amalei, he starts quoting a pasuk from Kilim. V'la Rasha Amalekim Malachol Asaka Chukav. Remember, to the Rasha, the Ebishter says, "What do you need to say over my chukim? What do you need to talk in Torah?" And Ahu Yenuka have him a gamgim belishne. This child had a speech defect. So when he said V'la Rasha, he kind of slurred it. Ishtama Commander Amalei V'la Elisha. It sounded like he was saying V'la Elisha Amalekim, like as if it's like directed towards him. So what happened? Ikad Amri, some say Sakina Havabade, that Elisha, that Acher had a knife with him, Vikare, and he ripped him up. Vishadri, we'll talk about this, I'll tell you in a second what Ben Yehuda says on it. Vishadri, the place of Bekanish, and he sent the pieces around to 13 different shuls. The Ikad Amri, others say it wasn't that he actually did it, but Omar, he said, Ihavoi Biyadi Sakina. If I had a knife in my hand, have a Karainile, I would have ripped him up. Ben Yoyota says, doesn't mean he tore up the kid. I mean, for one thing, then you're going to say this all happened because Reb Meir schlepped him into all these shuls. You're going to, Chas v'Shalom, that such a tragedy happened because of Reb Meir. Rather, it means that Elisha was so mad he took the sefer that the kid was learning from, the sefer Tillim, and chopped it up into 13 pieces. Tosfos on Amud Aleph, by the way, says there's more than that. Here the Gemara is not really going into the details, but the Yerushalmi provides a lot more details about what Acher was doing in those days. It wasn't just that he was ripping up kids or sfarim, as the case may be. It was also, I mentioned before, about Kitzitz Ben Atiyas. He was also cutting them off Veruchmius. He would convince them that the Torah is not for you. You should be going out, and you should be going out and getting the, you're more suitable to be some other kind of job. You don't need to be a Talmid Chacham. It's not going to get you anywhere. So he calls a lot of people to abandon learning Torah. Also the Yerushalmi mentions that during the time of Shmad that we were talking about before, there were Jews who they're being forced to work on Shabbos. They didn't have the Schultzkeit, I guess, to go on Mesiras Nefesh for it. But at least they tried to minimize the Chilul Shabbos. Shnayim Shasar Upturim. For example, two people carry one thing together. They're Pater. Elisha, who knows El Acher, who knows all the dinim, would tell the Romans what they're doing and make sure that they do it in a way that's actually Mechal Shabbos Meder Aisa. So these are the kinds of things.
He would tell, yeah.
So when we said that Reb Meir continued being a Talmud of Acher, you get the idea. Let's stop from Meir and then we'll continue. We'll finish up the Amud and I'll tell you something from Derdus Rishonim, where he explains something that illustrates how deeply the people resented Reb Meir for still staying together with Acher after all this. Well, let's stop Meir first.
He was making it way more of a rasha.
But yet we see Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi that in the end he died with thoughts of tshuva, and we'll see soon what happened with him after in the Olam HaEmes. We'll see. This isn't the end of him.